Welcome to the Casey Kowar Show, a celebration of words. I'm very pleased to have as my guest today Stephen White. We will be discussing Mr. White's new novel, Kill Me, which has recently been published by Dutton and is currently available in your bookstores. And also, Missing Persons will be available in paperback by Signet at the same time in March. So we'll discuss Missing Persons as well. So first of all, Stephen, thank you for taking the time to talk with us today.
Casey, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I've been a fan of the Dr. Alan Gregory series since Privileged Information. I can remember reading that back in, I believe it was 1991. And I've always been very intrigued by the plot lines that you develop using Dr. Gregory, and the cast of characters that has evolved over time has kind of come to seem to almost like a family, I think, to those of us that are your readers. And with Kill Me, you made a rather bold change in direction with the series. And if you would tell us a little bit about Kill Me and what you did with this novel.
When I got the idea, the inspiration for the concept behind Kill Me, it was immediately apparent to me that I could proceed in one of two ways. I could twist the concept a little bit and fit it into the confines of the series and, you know, find ways to use the ensemble that I've created over the years that have showed up in so many of the previous books. The other alternative I realized was that I could write this as a standalone without any of the series characters. The actual plot began to take shape in my head, I recognized that I was going to need a tour guide for the protagonist I was considering, and that person would be a sounding board and allow the person to tell the story in the sort of convoluted way that I knew I was going to need to tell it. For a variety of reasons, I decided to use Alan Gregory in that role, but I didn't have to. I could have used a new character and avoided series characters entirely. I decided to keep it with Alan Gregory so that I could give readers who are familiar with the series a new way to view him. Because in this book, the only way that the reader gets to view him is through the eyes of the protagonist. And I thought that would be a fun experience for those people who are familiar with the series. For readers who are unfamiliar with the series, I think Kill Me provides a great introduction because there's no series context for this book.
Mm-hmm.
A reader doesn't have to know Dr. Gregory or any other character to get fully engaged in this story.
Yes, I agree completely. And I was very interested in the protagonist who goes unnamed, as his perceptions of Dr. Gregory and why he goes back, sometimes almost against his will, because he understands that he's getting something out of the therapy sessions and that Dr. Gregory is not just going through the motions with him. And had you created a new character, truly a standalone, you know, maybe they might not have had the integrity that Dr. Gregory had. For us that are series fans, that we know this is probably how he would have handled a guy like this.
And I think that's the bonus for people who are familiar with the series, is they get to expand that context in which they view Alan Gregory. From my point of view, I got to write in a new voice and got to feel the excitement that comes along with a fresh perspective.
And Stephen, one of the bonuses that I have received from reading Kill Me and from doing a little research was you referred me to a book called Not Fade Away, A Short Life Well Lived, written by Lawrence Shames and Peter Barton. And I read that book over the past couple days, and as a little bonus for the listeners, I highly recommend that book to the listeners, because it is a beautiful read.
It's just a little treasure. And, you know, when I first met Peter Barton and got involved in hooking him up with Larry Shames, because he wanted some help putting these things he had written into book form before he died, I had no idea what was going to come out of the project. And I just consider that book to be a treasure for all of us who lose perspective sometimes on the value of the lives we get to lead.
Mm-hmm. And Lawrence Shames is a very good writer in and of his own right, so I was real pleased that he was the one that worked with Peter Barton on that project.
Larry's a great writer, and I had a gut feeling that they would work well together. They had an awful lot in common in their background, and I think the collaboration just turned out to be magic.
Yes. Now, Stephen, back to Kill Me, I kept looking over at my wife when I was reading Kill Me, and I've learned that if I tell her too much about a story, she'll kill me. And there's that fine line of wanting to read a paragraph or starting to explain the plot of what's happening and then realizing that the person's likely to read the book. So you don't want to give too much away. But I think with Kill Me, you touched a nerve that I think all of us, I'm 48 years old right now, and at some point we say to ourselves, there's a certain point where if the quality of my life diminishes to a certain capacity, I don't want to be around to experience that. And if you would, I don't want to give any of the plot away, but besides the Peter Barton reference, how did the idea of the death angels and the actual the interpretation of the plot work itself out with you?
In a funny way, this book is easier for me to talk about than most of them. The concept is so integral to this story that I find that it's okay for me to talk about the concept, because the actual plot, the story, the narrative, doesn't carry the weight of the book.
Mm-hmm.
The concept is there, and we can talk about that skeleton without giving much away. A while after I met Peter, after he and Larry were well on the way to doing the work that would become Not Fade Away, I was sitting with him. This was a few months before he died, and we were sitting outside of his house, and he was telling me a story about his own father, who had died many, many years before. And the story evolved, and he started talking about a man his mother got romantically involved with years later, and that the man had mysteriously died in some kind of outdoor accident in the Southern Rockies. And as we were listening, Peter was in great pain by this point. He had stomach cancer, and, you know, the end was in sight for him. And I thought he was being kind of wistful as he talked about this guy's death and this sudden accident in the Rockies. And I said to him, "Peter, do you ever think about it? You know, on a good day, just getting into a car, going up into the mountains, and having an accident, putting an end to all this."
Mm-hmm.
And immediately, Peter said, "I couldn't do it." And he said he couldn't do it because his kids would wonder whether he had chosen to end his life that way. And Peter was determined that his death be as much of a model for his kids as his life had been. As I was driving away from his house that day, I began to wonder, what if you could do it, end your life at that point, but do it in such a way that your family wouldn't wonder, where your kids would never know? And before I even got home, I began to think about the next step. What if there was a company that would do it for you?
Mm-hmm.
That when you reached some predetermined amount of illness or disability in your life, that they would step in and anonymously kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And I immediately recognized that it was a question that I'd heard a dozen times in my life. You know, that I'd heard friends and loved ones tell stories about someone who'd had a stroke or had been in a car accident or had, you know, gotten some terrible illness. And somebody had said, if that ever happens to me, I wish somebody would kill me.
Mm-hmm.
And the wheels just started spinning for me. And this book and the plot just came out of me in an organic rush. It just felt like a natural development.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the question seemed universal. I'm not too different from you in age, and for people in our time in life, I think the question is just a crucial one.
Yes.
None of us want to be in a place where we're living days that we don't want to live.
Mm-hmm. And so that we make it clear to the listeners, we're not talking about a Dr. Kevorkian type thing. This is much more sophisticated and complex than that. And the process of determining what level of quality of life that you want to set as your baseline, that really, I think, gets the reader starting to think past the initial question of, number one, would I do this? And number two, then, really, how would I define this?
What's crucial to the concept as it developed for me is the fact that someone has to sign up while they're healthy.
Mm-hmm.
That the organization requires that someone be in good health when they buy this insurance. And the other thing the organization requires is the predetermination of what level of illness or disability that person is willing to tolerate before they would choose to have their life terminated. So by using those two criteria, I think it does become something people can relate to. Because I think the issue, once you're sick, of saying, I don't want to tolerate this, is a very different kind of conundrum than being healthy and trying to look into the future and saying, you know, at what point would I want to end this?
Mm-hmm.
And I just found the whole question to be a wonderful thing to play with for the 6 or 8 months it took me to write the book.
Yes, and the suspense, I mean, it really builds. And I was... I couldn't put it down once I got started on it, and it didn't take me long to flip the switch from the fact that this was a Stephen White novel. This was that Alan Gregory was involved, and while I missed the other characters, Sam and Lauren and the dog, and I missed those characters, I had the feeling like almost like going on vacation, that I would see them again probably in the next novel, and I was just going on a little vacation here.
That's the way I hope, you know, readers who are attached to the series will feel, that there's enough reminders. The story takes place largely in Boulder, the parts with Alan Gregory and the protagonist, and so there'll be plenty of things that are familiar. And, you know, for readers who are not familiar with the series, I think it provides a great introduction to Alan's thinking and his way of being in the world. And I think that, I hope that will be an allure for them to go back and look at previous books in the series. And your suspicion is right. The next book in the series will be much more a traditional series book, and the old players will show up again.
Was there anything about missing persons that writing that, was there anything while you were writing that and that, like I say, that is now available in paperback, and that had some themes, some of the Colorado themes, the JonBenet Ramsey. When you finished that, did you feel like you maybe wanted to take a little break from that from a little bit, or was it strictly from the Peter Barton?
You know, that conversation with Peter Barton was one of those moments. I've had them a few times in my career where literally a single interaction with someone gives me the entire thrust for a new story. So this totally came out of that conversation with Peter. you know, typically books evolve over time for me, and the story evolves over time. There have been a few other instances. When I wrote the program, that came to me instantaneously. The story behind Blinded came to me instantaneously. And they were both similar to what happened with Peter. They were both just gifts. A single sentence from someone in a conversation just gave me this aha moment, and I knew I had a book.
That's wonderful. That must be a good feeling when it happens.
It's great. It literally feels like a year's work is being delivered on a silver platter.
That's wonderful. Now, Stephen, do you still practice the clinical psychology, or do you write full-time now?
Funny question. I no longer practice. For a long time, I would have said that I don't write full-time, but the longer I do this, the more it's become a full-time endeavor. I don't do anything else. I actually closed my practice in the mid-90s.
Okay.
And there was a long time in my career where my writing was just a few hours a day. Either I'm becoming less efficient or more diligent, but as I get older, I find that the amount of time it takes to create a book is increasing rather than decreasing.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm sure there are demands of the promotion, and that gets woven into it too when you've achieved the level of success that you have. Stephen, what is it that as a writer that you're happiest about with Kill Me, compared to some of the other novels that came to you as gifts? When you finished this one, what was the happiest moment, do you think, or what do you think you accomplished most with your craft with the writing of this novel in particular?
That's a very interesting question, and the readers who have not yet gotten to Kill Me, and your listeners who have not yet gotten to Kill Me, may not be able to relate to this, but I think you will since you've read it. As you read Kill Me, the timeline of the story is incredibly complex. I think I counted once that there's somewhere north of 40 time changes as the book progresses, back and forth in time. And I was very concerned as I was writing it, purely from a craft point of view, that it was going to be difficult to follow or difficult to understand. And when I tell people who have read the book that I actually wrote it in the order that it's being read, not a single chapter was moved. Most people are pretty amazed.
Yes.
Because the back and forth is really quite stunning, and something I've never tried to do before. And from a craft point of view, what I think I'm most proud of in the book is handling the whole question of time and being able to manage the suspense in the plot by using the temporal variable, which I think is just an essential thing in this story. Telling it chronologically, telling it in a linear fashion, would have reduced the power significantly. So I knew what the dilemma was going in, and I'm very, very pleased with how I handled it. I've actually not heard from a single reader who commented at all about having any trouble with how the timeline develops.
That's good. And and when you said that, I was thinking I didn't either. And I guess I assumed that there was some editorial work involved and that you had moved things around. So for it to come out that way, that is really that's surprising. That's surprising for me to hear, because I would have assumed that this was something that multiple drafts and a lot of editing and revisions went into.
Well, my editor at Dutton, Brian Tart, made some wonderful suggestions on how to make the transitions clear to the reader that time was changing. But in terms of the actual progression of the chapters, it didn't change from start to finish.
Well, that is very good. Well, Stephen, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to talk today. I strongly recommend Kill Me. I found it to be very well crafted, very well written, And the nice thing is for your, like you say, for the fans that are coming to Kill Me and aren't familiar with the Alan Gregory, one of the delights in life is to discover a writer where you then can go back and you've got a backlist of 10 or 12 excellent books that you can read and get caught up. So I'm glad that you took this kind of step with Kill Me, and I hope that when we when the next Alan Gregory comes out that we can get back together and discuss that book.
That would be terrific, Casey. I really appreciate the opportunity. It's been fun talking to you.
Great. Thanks a lot, Stephen.
Thank you.